I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about a subject that's close to the heart of Indianapolis and Indiana, Monument Circle. We're going to talk about historic preservation for one of the city's and the state's most iconic sites. I'll be joined for the discussion by Marsh Davis of Indiana Landmarks, David Baker of the Indianapolis Historic Preservation Commission, and Bill Brown of Ratio Architects. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about historic preservation for Monument Circle. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests today are Marsh Davis of Indiana Landmarks. Marsh, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, John. Pleasure to be here.
It's good to have you here. David Baker, who is with Indianapolis Historic Preservation Commission. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. Thanks for this opportunity.
Certainly. And Bill Brown, who is primarily of Ratio Architects, but is also connected with Indianapolis Historic Preservation Commission. You're the president, board chair?
Yeah, that's correct, John. Yep.
Well, it's good to have you here as well. Well, let's talk a little bit about what the benefits might be of designating Monument Circle as a historic landmark. I guess the grammarians are going to start lighting up the phone lines. We'll have that old debate about whether it is ahistoric or an historic.
I don't know the answer.
I'll ask you one. Just tell me why it might be a good idea.
Shall I lead off?
That would be good. Yeah, please.
Well,
Marsh.
The historic districts... local districts have been a great tool for much of the 20th century and into the 21st century for protecting places that have special character. It's not just about the architecture, but it's the whole sense of place that we try to capture by way of establishing these districts, which do not suggest that things cannot change, but that if change occurs, that it will be done in a way that is thoughtful and somewhat deliberative. The earliest historic districts in America were founded. And the first one was in Charleston in, I think, the late 1920s. There was some zoning that was enacted and followed a few years later by the historic Vieux-Carré Commission in New Orleans. And of course, the desire was to protect the precious heritage of those places. But there was also a very strong economic incentive behind that, too. Think of tourism. Think of the dollars that brought in. If these places were laid waste as they were about to be in the early part of the 20th century, we wouldn't have these national treasures today, and they wouldn't have a tourism economy to keep their cities afloat.
Make the case, David, specifically for Monument Circle.
Well, I think what I find people are most surprised to learn is that there isn't special protection for Monument Circle. Generally, people just assume that it's there. But that is, as you said, the most iconic. It's the symbol of the city. It's where we bring our guests from out of town. And everybody, we've all had that experience of people from out of town, and they come and they're just blown away by how beautiful it is. And yet there isn't special protection. And over the years, there have been changes occur that could radically alter.
Such as?
Well, an example that we often point to is the northwest quadrant of the circle, which had one of the most spectacular late 19th century buildings in the city, the English Hotel, demolished in about 1950 and replaced with the J.C. Penney's. Completely different character. No windows up above. It just completely changed the character of the whole circle. That was then changed a couple decades later by a it was refaced with black glass. And I remember when I first came to work here, it was called the black hole on the on the circle.
I think they called it the Darth Vader building.
That's another one. Yeah.
Exactly.
And so these things happen without review and can really change things.
Bill, make architecture. I'm going to ask you to put your architect's hat on
here.
That's
fine.
What is distinctive about the circle in terms of the architecture and all of that that should be preserved? I mean, we can make – David, to some degree, was making the case that obviously it's been an important part of the city's development. It's a place where people come to.
Right.
But you can make a case for a lot of historic neighborhoods in that way, too.
Yeah, Monument Circle is probably one of the premier urban spaces in the United States. There's really few, if any, like it. You actually have to go to Europe to find similar circuses or circular spaces that are sort of defined by the architecture and create that room, if you will. I think what even makes our monument circle even more important is the fact that it sort of represents a number of decades of architectural style. There are various buildings that are placed around that, some more recent than others, that are all well-done pieces of architecture. And I have to be careful because some of that is biased because we actually did some of the work ourselves. But the point is that you have buildings like the Circle Tower, which are a wonderful Art Deco building. You have one of Nathaniel Owings, who is the founder of Skidmore, Owings & Merrill, who's from Indianapolis, doing what's now the Chase Bank building on the Circle. You have Christ Church. These are buildings that are really wonderful buildings that stand the test of time and need to remain a part of our heritage for years to come. And so when you recognize that there is not protection on these kinds of buildings and that, as we've seen even with the bank building, how many different banks have actually been in charge of that building, and not to say that Chase is going away tomorrow or anything, but you never know what the future holds. And so I think having this overlay is an important aspect of being able to make sure that these historic assets remain in our community for many years to come.
We are talking today about historic preservation for Monument Circle. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, David, I'm going to come back to you here. Talk to me a little bit about what the process is of designating something as a historic landmark, of preserving it. What does Indianapolis have to do, or the people in that area have to do to get this designated?
Well, the Preservation Commission is established by a state law, mm-hmm. and it lays out the procedure. And basically what has to happen is that the Preservation Commission has to adopt a preservation plan. They then recommend that to the Metropolitan Development Commission, and then they have to adopt that plan. And there's a public hearing at both of those. However, the commission always strives to get a lot more public input into the process than what is simply minimally required by law. In this case, we've had two public meetings and trying to by using Indianapolis Downtown Incorporated has helped us get word out to all the stakeholders and trying to get input back on what people think about it.
What have you heard back so far?
Well, the two meetings were very very good, I thought, and we were able to have a good discussion, particularly at the first meeting, about some of the pros and cons. But we haven't really had any particularly serious opposition to it that we're aware of at this point.
Well, Marsh, I'm going to take it a step further then here. What does a designation mean? I mean, I'm assuming it's something more than one of those kids' games we'd play where you'd tap someone on the shoulder in a super secret society and say, you are so designated, and then you walk away or whatever. There has to be some legal implications, some policy implications, some things that happen with the property. What is that?
Well, first, the whole idea of historic designation is somewhat arcane to to most of the public because they don't deal with it on a daily basis as we do. But there are many types of designation. If just for a moment, look at the National Register of Historic Places. When most people think, how do I become a landmark, they're usually thinking about the National Register of Historic Places, which is primarily an honorific list. It's kept by the Department of the Interior through the National Park Service. It recognizes places of importance both at the national, state, and local level, and there are thousands of properties across the nation that are listed in the National Register. It does not, however, provide protection. This is a big misunderstanding out there, and we try very hard to make it clear, but with so many, it's almost an alphabet soup of programs and agencies that deal with these designations. So you've got the National Historic Landmark status, which is very high, the National Register, which is a very broad category, but these do not protect property unless there's some federal funding involved. And that's a whole separate review process. But the myth is that if my house is listed in the National Register that I can't touch it or I can't paint it a certain color. Not true. There is protection, however, at the local level. And this is where it's a very close-knit buy-in by stakeholders almost to the neighborhood by neighborhood basis. And this is achieved by gaining support of enough property owners who want to protect their investment in their neighborhoods or in their commercial area, and they will designate an area that will allow certain protections to be placed on it to prevent unsympathetic changes, the use of inappropriate materials. It protects investments, and ultimately we found across the state that these districts thrive when it comes to property values, diversity. All the measures of quality of life seem to be stronger in these areas that are locally designated. So it's the local designation that has the protection and the real incentive for revitalization.
And I'm going to stay with you for just a second. Mm-hmm. I guess I should say, David and Bill, I mean, what are we looking at, a local designation here for Monument mm-hmm. Circle
yes.
or a national one? So a local designation?
Local designation through the Historic Preservation Commission.
And why have we decided to go with the local route? Because of the protection?
Because of the protection and the system is already sort of in place. We have an 16 historic districts right now that are administered through the Indianapolis Historic Preservation Commission. So the body exists to already take on this responsibility. And the skill, the staff that David represents, as well as the individuals under him, have the talent and background to be able to support administering a historic district. So it makes sense to continue in that same approach.
What would this mean for Monument Circle? Marsh, I'm going to come back to you on that, the local designation.
Well, first, it is already listed as a national district by way of the National Register of Historic Places.
Right. Which does sound like, from the way you're describing it, a little bit close to that super secret thing that we did
yeah.
when we were kids.
yeah.
It's nice, but, you know, right. really doesn't mean a whole lot.
Yeah. And it is very important because there is a lot of public money that goes into places such as Monument Circle, and it is good to have that little bit of protection against the use of taxpayer dollars that would have an impact on it creates a review process. But the local designation will mean just a little higher caliber of attention to these buildings, which I think everyone around the table has said represent really the best that we have in the state. This is the commercial and architectural core of our state, and it's central and deliberately so. And there are qualities about these buildings that it's almost you get down to the details that really warrant a greater level of attention than if they were, for instance, out on the beltway or in a commercial shopping area. It's almost as though this is Indiana's Main Street right here, and we want to pay special attention to those qualities that people have come to admire over time. And this designation will help us achieve that. And I should say that Indiana Landmarks, we're not in any way directly involved in the process other than we're standing by cheering this on and heavily supporting it. But it's not a role that we play any part in when it comes to the protection.
We are talking about historic preservation for Monument Circle here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, David, what specifically are we trying to preserve here? I mean, I would presume that it's somewhere between, I guess I would say, you know, the, on certain parts of the circle, there have been, you know, coffee shops, fast food restaurants move in. I'm presuming that's not what we're focused on preserving. What specifically do we want to preserve?
Well, it's important to note that we're talking about the circle, but we're actually talking about the context of the circle. So it's a larger area of several blocks, the center of which is the circle.
How far south does it go?
It goes approximately to just past Washington Street. What we do is we're meeting up with the wholesale district, which is already designated, has been since 1990.
Okay.
So that there'll be a seamless protection from the wholesale district up through the monument.
We're going to pick this up on the other side. We are talking about historic preservation for Monument Circle here on No Limits. My guests are Marsh Davis, David Baker, and Bill Brown. I am John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about historic preservation for Monument Circle. My guests are Marsh Davis of Indiana Landmarks and David Baker and Bill Brown, both of the Indianapolis Historic Preservation Commission in different capacities. David is one of the top staff people, and Bill is the president. We're going to talk, we were talking just before we went to the break, David, about how designating Monument Circle for historic preservation is more than just doing the circle itself. I think we'd allowed you to get to the south and say that you were, it extends to Washington Street down toward the wholesale district, but we're going to get the other parameters and then talk about what it means.
Yeah, it roughly goes up to Ohio and from Capitol over to Delaware. But it jigs and jags here and there, so it's not exactly that. But it encompasses about 90 buildings. And the thing that's really unique about this particular preservation plan is that rather than identify those buildings or identify what we call an era of significance, it identifies what we're calling a continuum of significance. So every building is representative of some development era of Indianapolis that has some importance from Civil War up until the present and into the future. So the thing that exemplifies that is I would say the Northeast quadrant, where you've got a Civil War, the Civil War church, you've got a 1920s Gothic revival, the Columbia Club. And then right next to that is a mid-century modern, international-style modernist building, the Chase Building. All of them important, but none are really more important than the others, but they're important for different reasons. And so that's the unique thing about this particular district that's different than other historic districts, where we're really looking at, in other districts, kind of a specific important part in era of time.
We are talking about historic preservation for Monument Circle here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, I want to continue with you for just a second, David. How do you go about determining which areas are worthy of historic preservation? I mean, technically, history happens everywhere. What makes something interesting or important enough to reach the threshold that we need to protect it or preserve it?
Well, there are different, probably different motivating factors for different kinds of districts. Certainly, this particular district is pretty obvious because of the quality of the architecture and the history of the buildings. It was put on the National Register some years ago. So oftentimes what the commission does is we look at where National Register districts are. A lot of the districts that we've done are neighborhood districts, and the motivating force behind those tend to be the residents themselves who are seeking protection. But as you said, some may have more history than others. Some may be important because of their of the architecture itself. We have one district that does, I would say, doesn't have great architecture. It has, but it's like a small town, Indiana, surrounded by the city of Indianapolis, and keeping that historic character is of the whole little town is the important thing. So each one's a little different.
Marsh, is what in terms of what drives it? Is it the character of the buildings or what happens there? I mean, I'm thinking in part, you know, if you travel to Springfield, Illinois, Abraham Lincoln's home yes. really isn't that spectacular as homes go. But obviously, there's tremendous significance and because of who inhabited it. What's the determining factor?
Well, you hit it a little bit earlier. I mean, history happens everywhere. It's just that not everyone's history is of interest on a national basis. But we're finding that that so many of the local districts, the motivation for local designation is as much about the aesthetics and the quality of character of life than it is about history itself. History is important, but most of the districts we have, I think, are very typical, the kind of history that would play out in any city of this size. But when you find areas that have distinctive physical characteristics that people want to protect, that's where I think the motivation lies. I mean, this commission, they cannot preserve history, but they can work to preserve and save some of the features, the tangible features that enrich our lives on a daily basis.
Preserve our window into that part of life. Bill, during a break, we were talking about the fact that people misunderstand this process and what it does and the level of regulation that goes into it. Could you talk a little bit about, you know, assuming that this designation goes through right. and that, you know, the local designation is forthcoming, what is that going to mean? Is it going to mean more regulation, less regulation, and specifically what kinds of regulation?
Yeah, one of the misconceptions as we sort of put historic districts in place is that it becomes another layer of sort of review, if you will. And that's not the case, and that, again, is the situation here. A regional center currently reviews all of development sort of in the regional center of Indianapolis or the downtown area. And as if this is ultimately realized as a historic district, this review process through the Historic Preservation Commission will actually replace the review by the regional center. So in effect, we're just exchanging one review process for another. Now, certainly, as Marsh indicated a few minutes ago, the review that the Historic Preservation Commission conducts tends to have a little higher level of oversight and standard as it relates to the aesthetics mm-hmm. of a place. But that's because there's really a focus on making sure the character of this very sort of specific area is maintained and not lost. So the commission has a tendency towards an eye towards making sure that the architecture and the quality of materials and the longevity of those materials and longevity of the style of design is timeless, such that it will last many, many years and many decades.
So what sort of things then would not be possible on the circle going forward?
Well, I mean, typically, you know, it's hard to be hypothetical about what could and couldn't be approved kind of a thing. But certainly there's, you know, as you start to look at other development around the city that is outside of historic districts, mm-hmm. There tends to be, in some cases, not always, but it's in some cases, sort of less refinement of the architectural quality. We really strive very hard with the commission to make sure that the design that is being brought into a district, if it's in fact a new building, will fit with the contextual whole and the sort of the character of the place, rather than sort of just landing something, if you will, that is completely foreign as an object. At the same time, when you have a district like what we're talking about here on Monument Circle, with it being having this continuum of significance, there's going to be more opportunity for the very few parcels that actually exist that remain to be developed for sort of a broader view of the kind of sort of development that can occur there, because there's a much broader range of architectural character rather than everything being focused in, say, the 1890s or the turn of the century, like the wholesale district.
Well, and even with, I would think, the theater there and all of that, the fact that there were flashing lights and,
right.
and a lot of the other things, that's part of the Circle's history
right.
as well. What, you know, periodically there are discussions about closing down Monument Circle to traffic, making it a pedestrian-only area. Would that play any part in this process, Bill?
Well, yeah, certainly as streetscapes are redeveloped, and obviously and there's a plan to go forward here very recently. It was announced about improving the streetscape of Monument Circle in the area, sort of leading to it. That ultimately becomes part of the review process under the Historic Preservation Commission, but there's going to would be a lot of conversation about whether you would turn it into a pedestrian-only space or, you know, devoid of vehicular traffic. I know that there are varying opinions about that out there for sure, but I think that...
Where do you fall on it?
Well, I'd be happy to tell you where I fall on it. My opinion is that you have to have a combination of shared space between vehicles and pedestrians to have a truly urban experience that is rich and enriching. I think that without one and without the other, it's proven to not work very successfully. And I think that if there's a, sort of this marriage of the two being able to come together, whether it's people on bicycles or people walking or people on segways or whether it's people in cars, that having that mix and having it at a rate of speed that is appropriate, that those people can share the same space, will create the kind of environment that we want to have on Monument Circle.
We are talking about historic preservation for Monument Circle. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Marsh, you know, in theory, everybody wants to preserve history and wants to preserve
Well, not things. Everybody.
But in theory, I preface that. I qualified it.
We wish.
I'm relatively careful yes. with my language, so I did qualify it. But there's a lot of pushback on projects such as this, and you guys yeah. have all heard it. I mean, they'll talk, instead of historic preservationists, they call you the hysteric preservationists and all of that, you know.
Fighting words.
Fighting words. Well, you know, they're not mine. I'm just the vehicle here. I'm the medium. So where does that sense of opposition come from? Let's start with that first. Okay. Where do you think it comes from?
Oh, at a most basic level, I think it's the idea of people's sense that they are free to do whatever they damn well please with their property. It doesn't, no matter what effects it has on the neighbors. It's basically a kind of a property rights individualist point of view.
Person's home is yeah. his or her castle.
Right, and that's understandable, and it's certainly a mindset that's quite common today. But I think if given the opportunity to show the benefits of designation, you'll find that it really is not very hysterical at all. It makes great sense economically, culturally, and we're not always given the opportunity to have a thoughtful dialogue on that. That's why this conversation today, I think, is much appreciated, and the public meetings we've had with the Preservation Commission have been helpful, because we've seen people come with questions to these meetings. In fact, one of the questions at the first public information session used the very word. I hear that when the hysterical society gets a hold of your neighborhood, that you can't do anything. And this was a key stakeholder in the downtown district. And by the time that he had finished talking to Bill and to David, he came away quite happy and satisfied that this was going to be good for his business. And that's the information we like to get out, that it's good for neighborhoods. Let's take a look at Lockerbie Square. Lockerbie Square is one of the first local districts designated. It's residential. But back in the 1960s and 70s, there was precious little investment, at least in the early 70s. Indiana Landmarks was one of the the leaders in there, working with the Junior League. We did a demonstration project, and gradually those homes were re-inhabited and restored, and now they are protected. It's a protected district that the residents in Lockerbie cherish, because it's brought their community to a level that would not have happened without local designation.
We are talking about historic preservation for Monument Circle here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. David, same sort of question about historic preservation and the reaction. Where does the bulk of the opposition, what's the most serious complaint that you've heard, a concern about having Monument Circle designated?
Well, I think that there's a widely held belief that when you designate a historic district, what you're doing is trying to freeze everything in time. You're trying to eliminate the possibilities of change, and you're really sort of anti-change. In fact, the thing that's going to save these buildings is that they change for the future. We recognize that. And so it's not a matter of that. It's a matter of managing change. But I think the biggest thing to look at is just look at the wholesale district. When we talk with someone who thinks that, you know, nobody's going to be able to do anything with their property, is just look south to the wholesale district. If anyone remembers what that was like in 1990, there was building after building with nothing going on in them, and now these buildings are restored, they're revitalized. They've got buildings that have been converted to hotels now. The people who are staying in those hotels are eating in the new restaurants. There's tremendous vitality. All was done with the regulation, you know, within that process of regulating the way the area looks.
One of the other, though, concerns that you will hear about this, and I noticed we started this discussion in part by talking about how Charleston and New Orleans had been one of the leaders. One of the complaints you hear from people who live in New Orleans and all of that is that, you know, there's something that becomes almost kind of cannibalistic about this, that they're consuming or eating their own past, as it were, by selling it. Bill, how do you respond to that? What do you see as a, you know, is there a danger? There are no unmixed blessings in life. If there is a danger to historic preservation, what is it?
Yeah, I think the thing that people have to understand is ultimately historic preservation has to balance itself in the urban design sort of continuum. It isn't the only thing, and it's not to be sort of discarded. I think you have to recognize that cities are living organisms, and history is a part of that living organism. And at the same time, you have to be reaching for the future and reaching, you know, into the present and knowing where you're going. And as a part of that is really beginning to recognize that there are certain assets that you want to take care of and sort of cuddle, if you will, and sort of make your own. And at the same time, you want to say, here's what our era is about, and here's what we're trying to express about ourselves. The way that we approach our design work, and I talk about this with a number of my young architects, is to get them to understand that we want to do buildings that people want to preserve in time on their own. And I think ultimately that's sort of the key to the urban environment. If you can create an urban environment that ultimately wants to be preserved because you continue to improve it, and that preservation is like a continuum, it just keeps moving forward along this timeline, I think that's going to be ultimately the result of a successful community from an architectural and urban planning and urban design standpoint. I don't think you can only sort of say, well, we're going to create this historic Disneyland kind of place. But what you do want to do is you want to have vestiges of the history so that you can recall it. There's a lot of memory that's a part of a community, and I don't think you want to lose that. And when urban renewal was happening in the 60s, a lot of that was, in fact, lost.
We are talking about historic preservation for Monument Circle here on No Limits. My guests are Marsh Davis, David Baker, and Bill Brown. I am John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about historic preservation for Monument Circle. My guests are Marsh Davis of Indiana Landmarks, David Baker of Indianapolis Historic Preservation Commission, and Bill Brown, who's also with the Indianapolis Historic Preservation Commission and is also with Ratio Architects. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, David, I'm going to start. We've talked about how there's a process started. There are public hearings. What's the timeline now? I mean, what, you know, if we're moving toward this, when do decisions have to be made? Presumably, there's also some lag time between when the decision gets made and the designation becomes official. So what are we looking at?
Well, at the moment, we've finished our two public meetings. We are in the process of getting – we have a survey that people can – from our website, they can do a survey online. We've gotten a little bit of response to that.
Anyone? You know, if you
anybody.
Live in Guam, you can fill out the survey?
You can, yes.
Okay, so that's not like, as the lawyers say, you really don't have to. I guess everyone has standing then in this discussion.
Well, okay. The area is really all of our areas, you know, it's for various reasons. But we will then look at what we have and see if we think any revisions need to be done based upon the input that we get. We're kind of shooting to possibly have the commission consider it perhaps in October. We certainly want to try to wrap it up by the end of the year if we can.
We are talking about historic preservation for Monument Circle here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Connie, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. What's on your mind?
I have a question for Mr. Brown. I believe his firm did the Emmis Communications Corporation on the circle and in the late 90s. And when the designs for that were published in the Star, I was interested in it and called to see if they had made a model of the building in the context of the circle. They hadn't, but in looking into that issue, I found that the Organization on Monuments did, in fact, have some authority over what happened on the circle, and they actually were able to step in and, I believe, ask for some design changes to better integrate that facade into the north, into the southwest corner. And I just wondered what Mr. Brown thought, whether that was a good thing or whether it simply, you know, added to cost in making design changes.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Connie.
Yeah, Connie, thank you. We did, in fact, design the Emmis Communications headquarters building. And you're absolutely right. There is some review over the monument itself, and there is an overlay in the zoning district there called the Skyplane Exposure Overlay, which restricts the height of the building as it sets back from the circle such that it allows sunlight to penetrate down to the ground plane or the street in Monument Circle. You know, one of the things that group did in fact do was talk to us about how that building should sort of settle itself in. We worked closely with Regional Center, which was the reviewing body at the time, as well as the state oversight group from the Monuments group that essentially provided some input for us. I would say, having done work not only on the circle but in a number of our historic districts, that as an architect and as a designer, you actually like to have some restriction because it really allows you to react to that. One of the hardest things to do is to just create something sort of off a blank sheet of paper. When you actually have sort of restrictions and sort of parameters to work from, it actually can help inform the design to a greater level. Certainly, I think that the input that we received on that project, which we did in fact receive input from a number of places, actually contributed to that building being a better building. We have found that to be the case on our projects, and having sat on the commission now for a number of years, I believe that the projects that are ultimately constructed in our historic districts often are much better buildings because of the review process and the input that is given to them.
We are talking about historic preservation for Monument Circle here on No Limits, and I probably should say, just as a bit of disclosure, MS Communications provides the office space for my students to work out of at the State House file. Don't want to withhold anything from the audience. But I guess since that subject's come up, and it is a building that is, you know, on the circle, in terms of the challenges of doing something that would fit into the character of that area, what did you try to do?
Yeah, one of the first things we focused on was actually the color of the building. Having had the opportunity to redo the Darth Vader building that we were describing just a few minutes ago at the Northwest Quadrant, when we redid that building, we made sure that it was a light-colored building and used granite in that case. With the Emmis building, we ended up using limestone and granite as the two primary materials. And one of the things that we also focused on is the journal facade was this historic facade that had been sort of left from the fire and so forth when Wasson's had burned down. And we incorporated that facade into the overall development of the project. And so we were very focused on making sure that the pedestrian scale at sort of the right-of-way of the circle was maintained. And then we obviously wanted to make sure that the building set back properly with the skyplane exposure. And then architecturally, we were very interested in communicating kind of what was going on with the building. So there's actually some symbolism that actually occurs with some radio waves on the building patterning and so forth.
We're talking about historic preservation for Monument Circle here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation via Facebook or Twitter, as a listener named Emma has, you can do so at WFYI. Emma's got a comment where she says, preservation is a relationship between place and memory and the way we can build stronger communities with the places of our past. She adds, it's not a resistance to change. But then she asks a question, are there any established organizations opposed to this proposed local designation? David, I'll throw that one your way.
I'm not aware of any at this point. That's I don't have a long answer to that. Okay. There has been no organized opposition. There have been individuals who have questions, reasonable questions that people should have. But
you're saying that there's a survey that you're doing online. How's the voting on that run?
It's not actually voting.
Okay.
There's a series of questions, and then there's a couple of places where people can put in information if they want. It's been large.
But they don't get asked good idea, bad idea. You know,
there's a place you could put your ideas in if you have them. At the moment, it's been largely positive, but we're just beginning to get feedback from the survey.
We are talking about historic preservation for Monument Circle. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Russ, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
You somewhat touched on my question when you were talking about the MS Communications building, and I just wanted to take it to a broader level, to the whole circle. And that is, I was wondering how you'd go about coming up with a set of standards by which you would determine what you'd approve or disapprove in the future. And here's why I ask that. When you talk about the warehouse district, that's almost kind of homogenous. It's all pretty much old 1890s warehouses and things, while the circle is a complete hodgepodge of everything from the plaid-looking former American Fletcher building all the way up to the Skiles Test building. Given that much variety, how do you come up with a consistent standard? And very closely related to that, would you ever look to the past, like, say, the former English Opera House, to influence any of that?
Thank you very much for the questions, Russ. Well, Bill, I'll throw that one to you first, but let everybody take a crack at it.
I'll answer the last part, looking to the past. When we actually redid the building on the northwest quadrant for Anthem and Wellpoint, we actually did, in fact, look at the English Opera House or the English Theater building. And ultimately, the small tower elements that occur at either end of that building are, in essence, recalling the turrets that used to exist on the former English Opera Theater, just giving it a sense of sort of closure. And then we also created sort of a centering of that building with regard to its entrance. I think that it is important to appreciate the past. At the same time, I think that this idea of this continuum of significance is also important, and therefore when you look at a building like Emmaus, which was done, you know, a number of years after then that we did the Anthem facility, the style of architecture is different. It's also from the 90s. It's not from the 80s. And I think that that kind of continuum and that kind of approach is going to be important going forward on future developments that may occur within this area. And I think David can speak maybe to how the standards have been developed for the district.
Yeah, anyone who's familiar at all with the design standards in our traditional historic plans would find that this is going to be very different. And the reason it's different is because we have this continuum of significance. We have such a wide range of buildings. So what we've done is, rather than just we've incorporated proven guidelines from the past that we're already using. For instance, the wholesale district, we are, by reference, including those in as legitimate guidelines for this plan because there are buildings that will be helpful. We're also including the design guidelines from the regional center plan that are already in place. We're also referencing the Secretary of Interior's guidelines. Now, it's probably more work on our part this way, but it's really the only way to be able to sort of custom design your standards for each building because they're so different.
And I guess I want to ask this question. Is it easier or more difficult to do historic preservation in a place like Indianapolis as opposed to a place like New York, which, you know, reinvents itself every 20 minutes? Or is the challenge greater? Marsh, if you can answer that one briefly.
What we have in Indianapolis, I think, is something I feel very good about, is that we have this healthy interplay between old and new. We're not an environment similar to Savannah where you could be transported in time. You stand on the street in Indianapolis, you know you're in the present, but you see these wonderful survivors from the past that add and enrich our lives. So it's this interplay that I think is so healthy. We call it a continuum, living organisms, all these things. It's this healthy balance that I think that we've achieved here. And it should ultimately make preservation, I wouldn't say easier, but it should make it palatable to a larger number of people because we've shown that it doesn't stop progress, that it improves the economy and encourages a healthy amount of tourism without being overrun by it.
We are talking about historic preservation for Monument Circle here on No Limits. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you very much.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I was listening to the program, and I'm not sure I heard correctly. There was discussion about the boundaries of the historic district, and it sounded as if the Old State Museum might not be included in the designation. And so I was just wondering if that is correct or not.
We will try to get you an answer. Thanks very much for the call and the question, Bruce. David.
The caller is absolutely correct. The old city hall that was at one point a state museum is not included in this district. Doesn't mean it isn't important. It certainly is. In fact, Marsh may want to speak a little bit to efforts being made to try to find some use for it.
I think that's your cue, Marsh.
Well, I was asked recently, is old city hall
endangered. And I'd say, no, it's not endangered. It needs a new purpose. It's a very specialized kind of building. It's one of the grandest interior spaces we have in the state. It's a glorious inside, which poses some – it's more of a ceremonial space as it was intended to be back when it was built as City Hall. In the fall, late October, early November, Indiana Landmarks is hosting the National Preservation Conference. And we're spending a whole day focusing on Old City Hall to kind of a brainstorming session. We call it a charrette in the architecture world. But we hope to at the end of this day, provide some ideas that make economic sense that we can then present to the city for its consideration as a way to move forward with potential new uses for City Hall. But the city has taken some great measures in improving the building, keeping the water out. It just needs a new purpose.
And we are planning a show on that. Yeah. Actually, we are talking about historic preservation for Monument Circle here on No Limits. Erica, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Yes, well, I am a local pastry chef, and I'm pairing with a local chef and have interest in the historic Roslyn Bakery space that had been a Dunkin' Donuts for a couple years, and I am up against a lot of corporate interest in the space, and downtown Indianapolis and the Monument Circle, I have great interest in offering a independent diner spot, and was just wondering how to kind of hone support for independent local businesses to...
We're getting a little tight on time, Erica, so let me try to get you an answer. Thank you very much for the call and the question.
Thank you so much.
Certainly. Thank you. Bill, I'll throw that one your way. How would you go about
it? Well, I think that, I know a new developer has taken over the old Roslyn building. They're looking to add a second story to that building and to try to actually improve sort of the look of it. There are also some other smaller historic buildings along Washington Street that still have some opportunity for reuse. As a neighbor just a block away from that corner, I would welcome having a pastry shop nearby and a bakery and would frequent it, I suspect, regularly. Certainly, contacting sort of a real estate agent is usually and often a good way to go. And if you have direct connection to building owners or developers who are looking at doing some things in the area, that's also an avenue to pursue. I think that lots of historic preservation projects, whether you go down to Fountain Square or Massachusetts Avenue or in the wholesale district, really welcome small businesses and small retailers in a lot of ways. And we're seeing some really wonderful places showing up right now in those historic districts.
In just a few seconds, Marsh, as we get close, tell me how this is going to change Monument Circle.
We hope that it's something that will be unnoticed and that we will not experience something really bad happening that might otherwise happen without this designation.
That'll have to be the last word. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
Support for No Limits is provided by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu.